Beck, Wayne, Jay, and Scott, your host here at Sharing the Burden. And yes, we're live. We're part of the Whistle FM network and proud to be so. And, you know, we just talked about collaboration a little before the break and in the break. But and I was thinking Wayne could probably help us out, you know, how to put groups of companies together to number one, probably arrange funding to make them all work. Because, you know, as much as we don't want to lust after money, if we don't go after money, we can't do what we need to do. We can't get to where we need to get to. And most of us, and Wayne included, most of the time work for nothing. So, you know, and it doesn't seem to matter what your position is. It's, you know, I vowed in my end of things to always be that way. But I still have to live. So, you know, if I don't make anything from running a charity, then I have to make something from something else, you know. And we're all saddled with that. But Wayne, when you want to put groups together, like, you know, I don't know who you're working with as Seeds of Hope director. I know one of the ladies, Elizabeth Trombley, you seem to be doing some things with, and she seems quite expert in looking at funds and programs that do offer money to different disciplines. And anyway, what's your take on the whole deal?
And Elizabeth has been awesome for the last 25 years in what she has been doing, getting funds, and she's very much a leader in the peer support movement. It's something, it's an incredible return on investment. It's very simple. Like, almost for every dollar you spend for the government or whoever, you get at least $10 back to the economy, and not to mention the lives that you enrich. And definitely lives you save. There are certainly lives that are saved each year. Seeds of Hope, it started about 12 years ago. Sister Moran, she got the Order of Canada, so she's got famous for starting the Out of the Cold program. You know, she was very aware. She was a teacher, and one of her students did a project on a homeless person living up the street. And by the end of that student handed the project in, that gentleman had died on the street, so she became a huge advocate. Sister Moran, she died unfortunately a couple of years ago, but she was like a little Mother Teresa. She was able to pick up the phone and get money to come in, because it was very simply saving lives, enriching lives. So what we have at Seeds of Hope, it's right down at 6 St. Joseph Street, downtown Toronto, Yonge and Wellesley. All the services are free. There's a free lunch on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 1 till 6. And there's several courses. Like Thursday nights is an art class, there's a music class. Just drop in social. I run about six or seven 12-step groups, which have been phenomenal. And again, it's thanks to God for the internet. I'm able to get the word out that this is it. And that's how a lot of people come, as far as the courses that I facilitate. But there are some other courses. And just drop in, just about sharing the story, sharing your, that is what one of the courses is called. And it's really making a big difference in people's lives, just feeling that connection, being connected. And it's good that a lot of the people are retired, teachers, retired people, and just people of all ages and walks of life, just wanting to give back, because for everything you give back, you get a lot in return.
You mentioned a dollar for 10. How does that work?
You should say almost like a dollar. You give in, you get $8 back. Just the fact that when people are connected, whether it be through people that have addiction or trauma, they're much more likely to return to the workplace or maintain in the workplace much longer, much less likely to have currently less crime, less addiction, less challenges, because it's very expensive. Of course, the cost of avoiding somebody who's living on the street, if you just avoid it, it ends up costing the health system a lot more than if you did give them basic peer support, connection, and give them a hope. You know, the whole thing is that's something you can't put a price tag on. And which I love, the Seeds of Hope, the sound.
Well, you know, one of the things that you're coming into a little in that you would like to do what some of us do in the jails, and that's underway, as you know. In there, hope needs to be established first. That's the first thing in there. So, you know, whatever people know about that, and my knowledge of that is very simply, I have to be that vessel that simply goes every day or every time into these places without agenda and with an ability to love the the person. And I don't care about the behavior of the person. I separate the two, and I've been gifted in an ability to do that. And what that's returned is, I can't even explain it. I tell the people who come in with me that, you know what, we go in there and you always come out high, you know. And I don't mean high on drugs, you know, because
that.
Some of the people think, and then they're right to some degree, you probably could get high in there. But anyway, we come out and we're high.
Yes.
And I'll tell you why we're high. I finally figured it out. It's because we have absolutely no concrete reason other than love to be in there at all, you know. And but we don't go in and tell people about that kind of stuff. We're just in there, and that's who we are. But more than that, the inmates who come to us really, everybody wants more out of life. At least some of them are at that low point where without a seed of hope, they're done. And we let them love us. And it sounds corny, but we let those guys love us. And it's as though they taught us, an agape or a love that's unconditional. And then we're able to take that and transfer it, inside or outside. And that is so powerful to me. It's, it's almost as though, however you believe spiritually, folks, it's as though this love, we'll just call love a spiritual component, is handed to us by those marginalized people who most people don't only want to ignore, they want to stay away from, you know, and they've got this love to give us that can cure all things. And I'll tell you, that's unbelievable. If nothing else ever comes out of it, it's all I want.
You know? I agree completely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If I could add, I'm involved in this. In one community, there's over 2,000 members that have adult ADHD, and it is October is ADHD Awareness Month, so I'm pleased to know, and I'm glad you will be too. I know you will. That so KMH is designating, as far as their component for ADHD, is dealing with people that are in the prison system already that have it, because I mean, the experts throughout the world say about 40% of prisoners have some. Just like I've heard through you, like about 80% are somewhat drug connected. Like certainly there's a big overlap. So I'm glad this is the first time for KMH, the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, is acknowledging that, and they're dealing with it. Like I know in England about 8 or 9 years ago, you know, if you had a cocaine addiction, robbed a few banks, and you're in prison, let's say for 5 to 10 years, but within 2 weeks you were diagnosed, because then you could treat it. And to me, the best treatment that I've come across for ADHD, you know, for some it's meds, but in addition, it's simply the 12 steps is a book. So I run 6 courses, one which repeats itself because it's quite deep. So I call it the compassion course. It was called the love course for a couple of years. So it's...
what do you call it?
I call it the compassion course. It is because what I try not to use the word 12 steps or God or higher power. But once they're into the second meeting, they don't care what it's called, because it is all about the higher power. It is about the connection and their experience is something that they've never had before. And it's, I don't know if it's deceptive marketing, but I do know without exception, it helps every person that comes into it. And it's, and again, just like alcohol, perhaps is the cause for some people come into 12 steps, but I'm finding hundreds of people that are coming into the 12 steps through that avenue as well.
Are you having any success with people totally outside of, or in their minds anyway, outside of addiction, outside of just trauma and stuff, and coming around the 12 steps and finding, wow, there's something special here? I've had a few in my day, but not a lot, so I don't know. You're accessible to a lot more 12-steppers, it sounds like, in a day-to-day function than I am.
So. Yeah, I do have PTSD myself. I spent 8 weeks in Guelph at Homewood for treatment of it, but very clearly the treatment for it, the main one, is simply connection. Ideally having a group course, having something where people, the same group of maybe 10 to 14 people together, it makes a huge difference. And so I've seen hundreds of people with just PTSD, and perhaps for a third of those there may be some addiction or some other mental health challenge as well. If I could just add, like a book came out 2 years ago, it's called The Power of Eight. So research is pretty clear behind it. When you have
eight people,
and it could be like 6 to 12, but when you have six to 12 people together sharing their story, if they're authentic and they have high regard for others, magic and miracles happen. The research is quite clear on
and
that
number. No. That number is magic. I don't know. That's the number I've always had in my head. Like, you know, I like a meeting up to 12 or so, but eight.
Interesting.
Yeah, eight. Just I don't know why it wasn't seven. It wasn't nine. It was eight. You know, when I see eight, I wow. It's,
okay.
This is blessed. You know, for some reason,
the ideal number for the research.
Yeah, well, that's great. I didn't do the research either.
You got it. No.
Oh boy. So when you look out there, and you look at where you've come, and where you're going, and I'm not getting into 20-year plans or any of that kind of stuff, because personally. As I say, I'm focused totally on now, you know, to whatever degree that's possible. So, and folks, I say it all the time, and now is very special. We have a reading. We call it Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, which we read all the time at our meetings. But really what that does, if you bring it down to the moment, it separates history from future. So, you know, the last thing I did is done. The next thing I'm going to do is not started. There's a place there, there's a space there that I call now, and now is eternal. It never changes because it can never be but now. It's always now, no matter whether it's 20 years from now, 100 million years from now, or 100 million years previous, when you are there, it is now. So now is an unchanging, outside of time, special experience that nobody pays attention to. And it, very interestingly, in the last number of months when I run meetings in the prison or in the jails, I go into this and I say, you know, I'm going to read this for you or get one of you guys to read this. And I want to tell you that when you're finished, I'm going to tell you what I'm telling you guys out there now, is that I want us to focus a bit on that. And I want us to go there. I want us to go there for the next hour. And, you know, I don't want you to be thinking about it. We're going to go into this. And now we know things can happen there, yet it's a timeless zone. And I, you know, I have a spiritual connection to that in my mind. I don't know what it is or why it's there, but there's something very, very special about this now that's eternal and it's unquestionable. And time doesn't move there. You know, what do we do with that? How do we go into that? So maybe there's a whole new science needs to be started around that. I don't know. Or I need to be, you know, getting off the air. I'm not sure.
Oh no!
So where are you going? I mean, what's you're doing so much? I mean, how do you bring it all together? That used to be one of our slogans, one of our business. Bring it all together.
A couple of things I think now is so important. I've read articles about how. With all this technology we have that unfortunately in the West, people are more disconnected than ever before in the history of mankind. I think there's a small percentage, and definitely you two gentlemen are definitely in that boat, are more connected than ever before, thanks to technology. And I do find, one of the tragedies is when people do isolate, self included. I do a lot less. I'm much, much more active, but I do find, which is my passion, just being in groups, because that is a huge start, you know, and then some perhaps can do some one-on-one, but it all starts in the group by listening to others, the power. Again, I've been doing this for 21 years, and I'm just blown away with the authenticity of people sharing.
Yeah.
And I know for many of them, it's their first time in their life, and they're sharing at a level that took me 10 years to be that authentic, that real, and I just know it's mind-blowing. So there's a lot of tears and laughter in these groups. So that is my passion. So one of the communities, perhaps passion, is those with ADHD or trauma or an addiction, which covers a huge percentage. But for me, again, this one community of 2,000, my goal is to make it 4,000 a year from now using technology. But it's key that it be online, face-to-face meetings. That's where it happens. Yeah. There are some, there's a Facebook group with about 44,000, but it's for mood and anxiety. But to read them, it's very depressing. And I'm thinking if people are reading this and this is their only source, I have to pray for them. So right now it's the largest probably ADHD community in the world, but I want it to make it double just to have a greater voice so that at least perhaps other radio stations and whatnot will listen, because you and I know it works when you have people together. Yeah. And it's doesn't, we're not looking for a lot of funding. It doesn't cost much to run. There's some volunteers, but some basic funding will allow us to reach a lot more people. Yeah. And my goal is hopefully taking them, I'm taking this rap to Jamaica in a few months and to Israel next year and then to India in 2 years. But, you know, if I can take it to these other countries, why can't I not take it to more groups in this country? Yeah. Because this is where we probably need it the most, in the West, when people are quite disconnected.
We're the showboats. You know, really, I mean, we're Hollywood to the world. Or,
exactly.
You know, sort of an extreme piece of it, but we are.
We are.
You know, and, you know, just a phenomenal what you're doing. I love it. And did you start the ADHD?
This community group I did start, yeah. It's so if you put, Meetup, Adult ADHD Support on Meetup, you'll see my picture.
Wow. And you know what's neat, too, about that is, I don't know if you told me, Wayne, but it's the most treatable piece of mental illness out there.
Thanks for mentioning that. Yeah. Easily the most treatable of all mental health challenges. Easily, but unfortunately, most professionals are quite ignorant. They've had zero training on it, and sometimes a little training, like a few minutes, is worse than no training. But again, it's part of the treatment for some. It could be a med, but in addition to it, it is the face-to-face, the groups, and I've seen hundreds thrive. And I've also seen, like, I've had, unfortunately, six friend just in early September did take his life, you know, years earlier than he should have, because without any connection, without any treatment, and again, the treatment is very inexpensive. Mm-hmm. If people isolate, things happen, and I've seen, and that certainly propels me to really step up, because I'm wanting that one life lost is one life too many.
You know, one of the things that's very important, I know you say, you know, busy, you're going to be busy, and I agree totally, but there's a thing I call busyism, and busyism is for the guy or the girl, and don't get me wrong, it's not a great thing. Busyism is the guy or girl who, when not busy, suffers, and how to cope with those absolutely quiet moments when you can't push buttons, you can't do anything, and you've got to find a way to relax your mind and let things flow, that there's a big stumbling block. I remember one fellow, a multimillionaire, a friend said, I asked him, I said, well, what would happen to you if you just couldn't do all those things? He said, I'd be in big trouble. Big trouble. And he knew if he wasn't going, many people are like that. They go till they drop every day. My wife's like that.
Oh, really?
She and she she professes to know an awful lot of things, and God help me if she's listening right now. I thought I had problems before, but anyway, it's pretty amazing. But anyway, think a little on that. We're going to take a break here, and think a little bit about how you handle those moments, and if you do or if you don't, and you know, because I know there's a lot of people. If you stop them for 5 minutes, I mean, they're the ADHD, the ADD, everything imaginable.
Yes.
Happens, and they bring it on to get that stimulation and relief they think they get from doing that stuff. So, anyway, folks, Scott here, 102.9, host at Sharing the Burden, 102.9 FM, and we're live every Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 11, and we're going to take a break, and we'll be back really quickly.